Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for ChartsAndMarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, Jim, good to be here and good to be with you and good to be with our listeners.
Bob, we'd love to start the show with listener questions. Our question today comes from Justin in Berkeley. Hi, Bob and Jim. Since people have PTSD with the 70s, are we bringing back the misery index anytime soon? And is misery limited to just inflationary impacts on consumers? Or can it refer to crashing credit and debt deflation? The Democrats in the U.S. just seem to lord the inevitable arrival of the misery index over regular people daily.
Yeah. Now, the misery index, gosh, I hadn't thought about that one in a long time. And that was where you took the rate of inflation plus the rate of high unemployment, because the economists all had a theory that if you cranked up the money supply and got inflation, you have high employment with it. So I think they called that the Phillips curve. Anyways, it was disproven in the 1970s when you did have a period of time when inflation was high. It was higher than the rate of increase in wages. And then for fund managers, it was it was just terrible times. So they called it the misery index. Now, somewhere after that, I came up with the one where there's a time when you can have the bonds rally and the stocks going down, and that was the equity fund manager's misery index. Or if you just take the letters, it's the FME index. So anyways, yeah. Now, are Democrats part of this? Yeah. They're the ones who want to expand government, and when you expand government too aggressively beyond, well, they increase taxes to the point of intolerance, and then they supplement that with currency depreciation. So here you go. The this is what's been on. It's big government stealing, using inflation to steal money from ordinary people, and it's ancient. It goes way back in history. And, anyways, but I think that, because you asked the question, Democrats in the U.S. just seem to lord over the inevitability of misery. Yeah. The more people they have in misery, the more those people will turn to big government for assistance, and, of course, which they can't do. So, but I think, popular uprisings are developing against big government and masks and COVID and shutdowns and all this sort of stuff. So I think financial history is leading to enough popular uprisings that we'll end up with a great reformation, like you had in the early 1600s. And, yeah, thanks for the question. Yeah, I'd forgotten all about the misery index.
Oh, well, Bob, we're just typically not miserable people, and we hate people who try to make us that way.
Yeah.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Headlines that caught your attention. Shocking estimates show Ukraine's harvest could be cut in half. I think that's optimistic.
I don't know, but it sure gets your attention, and it is since the 1300s. that part of Europe has been an important source of, well, ages ago they called it the breadbasket of Europe. And it's been important. Now, that area was productive until 1917. with the Communist Revolution, all of a sudden disasters happened. They came in with central planning, and there was a theorist, agricultural theorist by the name of Lysenko, and they applied that forcefully, and it was one of those things where those with the political power living in the country got to live, and or living in the cities got to live, and those who owned the land and were not permitted to keep their grains got to starve. And in Ukraine, it was called the Holodomor, where some 6 million Ukrainians were exterminated by the lovely folks living in Moscow. So, hey, what's new in Russia these days?
And, of course, Russia has defaulted on their foreign debt, and that hasn't happened until shortly after the Russian Revolution in the late or the early 1900s.
Yeah, I think they will default on their debt. Yeah. Defaulting is a terrible thing. I mean, it's just, especially in a supposed modern country. But anyways, there was a headline about that. And we'll see what happens with that. But it was a couple of months ago when the credit rating agencies, Moody's and Fitch, did a six-notch downgrade in their credit quality rating to junk, right down to junk. And also, as I mentioned at the time when we talked about it then, decades ago, I knew some guys, there was Dominion Credit Rating Agency in Canada. I knew one of the guys there. And one time we were talking about, you know, what happens when a rating agency drops a security down to a junk rating and you just virtually kill the company. And he says, we're kind of reluctant to do that. And he says, it'll get to junk before we do the downgrade. And so here you have two major credit rating agencies downgraded Russian debt to junk. And the next step can be the inability to service that debt. And if you miss a payment, that's in default. So I actually haven't seen, have you seen a headline about actually not being able to make a payment, Jim?
Well, I did, but again, nowadays, can you trust headlines?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But anyway, when you have a country insisting that it be paid in its own currency, the ruble, which again, you'd have to rate as junk right now, being worth less than 1 cent U.S.
Oh, no, Jim, it's come back.
Oh, it's come back.
Oh, yeah. Oh. With doing these deals and getting some payment in rubles. But anyway, the slam to the Russian ruble bounced it right back to where it was before, which is actually helpful for them, because even going back to Thomas Gresham when he was fiscal agent for the British Crown in the money market in Antwerp in the 1550s, many of his letters to the Chancellor of the Exchequer explained that you don't want to be in the position of trying to pay back debt from a weak to a strong currency. And I was surprised by how fast it rebounded, but it helps them. And so I'm not going to condemn it. Whatever they've done, the foreign exchange markets decided to put the ruble back to where it was. So we'll see what happens next.
Headline: Wall Street gone wild. Bankers are spending big on nights of debauchery.
Yep, it's party time, and I hadn't seen a headline like that or in that style since the dot-com bubble blew out in March of 2000, and that a headline then was not really debauchery, it was just having fun, which was the brokers who were making huge commissions would just step out of their condo and down into a little liquor store and pick up a $1,000 bottle of champagne for the evening, you know. So two things about that were interesting. One, they were springing at a moment's notice a grand for a bottle of champagne, and two, a nearby liquor store had them in stock. So, but this one, this was really debauchery, ladies for the night, all kinds of things. And there was another one about a Bitcoin convention in Florida. And those, of course, you know, the nightclubs are going to go crazy with business. And so this group of five people went to a nightclub and line up to get in, of course. And so the deal was done. They paid $5,000 tip to the guy at the door so they could end up with a table. And, of course, it was paid by through a Bitcoin transaction. So, but this is the sign of an extreme party in the financial markets. And it's always happened, whether you're going back to the South Sea bubble of 1720, where suddenly those who did not have money had money, and they, you had, there's maybe the apocryphal stories about a servant with a grand house in London making some money, and he goes out and he buys a coach and a team of four horses, and he's got liveried servants and the whole thing. So, and then of course when the bubble came to an end and in the fall you had the crash, there was an area in London in 1720 where that's where you went to sell used horses and used coaches and stuff like that. So all of a sudden there were many of them on the market. Now, what could happen this time around is when it does fail, you're going to find not just Lamborghinis and Ferraris and Maseratis there, but you might find a few McLarens and Bugatti Veyrons and stuff like that there. So I've read an article, Jim, recently about these very high-end cars, like a McLaren or the Bugatti Veyron. If you buy one and you've got your lovely area where you keep your collector's cars and you don't even turn a wheel on it, the standard maintenance for a year is over $100,000. There are things that need to be done regularly, and it gets very expensive. Now, I think in Canadian dollars, that might be a $4 million car. So, I mean, you're talking crazy, crazy numbers here. So it is party time out there.
But a headline that maybe they're partying because it's, last call for alcohol, because U.S. banks are set for big hit to revenues as deal-making dries up.
Yeah, I liked that one. That was, I thought, timely that all of a sudden, the number of bond issues being done, when you got a disastrous junk bond market and it creeps up the quality ratings, and all of a sudden you've had an enormous hit to from treasuries to good grade corporates right down to junk bonds and less than junk. So, and that's also part of signaling that the party's over, is when lower grade bonds get tagged. So, but as you know, our view has been is that positive vibrations, maybe slightly positive vibrations, can continue into about May or June. You know, the old sell in May and go away in June thing. Maybe copper can be firm on its typical seasonal rise into July. Maybe lumber could be firm on its typical seasonal rally into June. I've given up talking about crude oil seasonals because they didn't work for us last year. But the yield curve.
Yes, we have a headline here, Bob.
Yeah.
Morgan Stanley says, this time it's different because, again, we have an inverted yield curve. Explain what that means and what does that usually predict?
Yeah. That Morgan Stanley article took the yield curve back 70 years. Now, I've got it photocopied, charts on the yield curve, which I've had since 1980, and it goes back in the U.S. to 1857. So you got lots of business cycles and lots of financial credit market cycles, and there's a rule of thumb comes out. And one is that U.S. yield curve inverts, and by that we mean that short rates get higher than long rates, and we kind of watch the twos to the tens. That's the two-year maturity relative to the 10-year, but oftentimes my historical stuff is actually 6 months treasury, 6 month yields compared to 20-year stuff. But at any rate, the rule of thumb is the yield curve inverts, you get a recession. The timing varies. Now, there's another nuance in here, and that is that at the top of the great financial bubble of 1873, the yield curve inverted and then backed off, and then it inverted again. So you had the curve invert twice as that bubble blew out and fell into its contraction. Now, that was also the case in 1929 when, again, the yield curve inverted, backed off, and then inverted again. And then you had the full collapse following that. But there was a time, the 1937 rebound in the financial markets as well as in the economy, that, as I said, went to 1937. Now, on that one, the curve didn't actually invert, but all it needed to do was reverse, and then you ended up with what at the time was called the depression within the depression, because you had another business cycle down. So I have a high regard for the long history in the yield curve and the credit cycle and the business cycle. So here it inverted recently, and I think it's backing off a little bit, and we'll just watch and see if it inverts again. Now, the other one on the yield curves, on credit markets, is the credit spreads, and that's the difference between high-grade and low-grade bonds. And in party time, people bid up high-grade bonds, or low-grade bonds, which shows risk, and they can take on risk, and so credit spreads narrow. But they narrowed most of last year, right through maybe till January, and then there's been positive in the credit spreads. But as I noticed last week, the spread that we follow is beginning to widen again. So here's where these things are outside the stock market, the yield curve and credit spreads, but they have a huge influence on the stock market. So we watch them closely.
Headline, big U.S. fund manager says monetary policy needs to serve the real economy, not just the financial markets.
Yeah, I took that one, Jim, because last week I wrote about in 1929, the Federal Reserve System, early in the year, there was a little group on their advisory committee that was concerned about the amount of stock speculation going on. So they then wanted the Fed to raise rates to cool stock speculation, because they knew then that eventually when stock speculation burns out, you get a recession. So the idea was plausible, but there wasn't enough of a quorum to go ahead with the policy. But then they reached that in August, of all things. So I think it was the middle of August, 1929, and they raised their discount rate from 5% to 6%. But at the time, the New York Times wrote up the policy was they were going to tighten money to Wall Street because it was speculative. And part of their plan was to ease money for Main Street, which meant the economy. So here's this big fund manager in the States is saying the same thing as what happened in August of 1929. that the Federal Reserve, and this guy says that should be serving the real economy. And in those days, they said the Fed should ease money to Main Street. So, hey, it's the same stuff. And so we'll see what happens here through the next few months. It's going to be an extremely interesting ride.
Bob, always fun chatting with you.
Fun indeed, I guess. And we try to look at the amusing side of a very serious and very precarious financial market. And we look forward to talking next week.
At the time of our podcast, the Russian ruble was worth 0.012 U.S. My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He was speaking to us from Vancouver. If you have any questions for Bob and he loves to answer them, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.